In partnership with NDIA, this podcast focuses on sustainment in a contested environment. It includes insights and commentary from the moderator, SCS retired Guy Boer, who will pose questions to four very qualified DoD and service logisticians. Together, they have over 180 years of experience in the field of sustainment and logistics. Panel members include Senior Executive John Hall, Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff G4, United States Army, Senior Executive D. Reardon, Assistant Deputy Commandant, Installations and Logistics at HQ United States Marine Corps, Senior Executive Kristen French, Deputy Director Logistics Operations J3 for Defense Logistics Agency, and Senior Executive Chris O'Brien, Principal Deputy Director for Logistics J4 Joint Staff.
Thank you all for participating in this podcast on sustainment in a contested environment. As a backdrop with regard to what's happening in the Ukraine right now, what is potentially happening in Taiwan, the Department of Defense has issued a fact sheet on the 2022 National Defense Strategy. Soon they're going to roll out, obviously, the classified version. But what you can pick up in that are the defense priorities, the first being defending the homeland, the second, deterring strategic attacks, the third, deterring aggression, and the fourth, building a resilient joint force and defense ecosystem. They plan on attaining this through three primary ways, these goals: integrated deterrence, campaigning, and building enduring advantages. With this as a backdrop, I'd like to ask you to identify what your organization is doing to better sustain a contested environment. So first, Mr. Hall, I'll start with you. What's the Army doing to better deploy and sustain in a contested environment?
Okay, so what's the Army doing to deploy and sustain, improve our ability to deploy and sustain? The first thing I'll mention is, so we have a 15-year plan to modernize our organic industrial base. We started this year on this POM that we just completed, POM 2428. We put a down payment onto that 15-year plan to modernize our depots, arsenals, and ammo plants. And clearly, we've seen in the ongoing Ukraine operation the need to modernize our ammo plants. So we're hoping to accelerate that. We have a 15-year plan, as I mentioned. We've got initial funding for it, but hopeful that we may be able to accelerate some of that, particularly as regards the ammo plants. As you know, or maybe you don't know, that Army manufactures munitions not only for the Army but for the other services as well. Secondly, we invested quite a bit of money in improving our capacity to deploy from installations in this POM cycle that we just went through, and we're planning on continuing it in the next POM cycle. Not only improve the capacity like rail car capacity on installations, but we'll continue that in the next POM, and also protection of that capability as well. We just proved the force protection posture of Sunny Point. Clearly, we saw the need for that as we're supporting ongoing operations in Ukraine, and we'll continue to do that. We're modernizing our Army pre-positioned stocks, for example, putting Abrams M1A2 Set B3 in there, putting JLTV into pre-positioned stocks. We've got enhanced HETs that we put into APS in Europe, which has helped us, of course, in the ongoing operation and to support Ukraine. We've also recently revisited the way we issue APS, and we're going to go with a log cap capability to push APS to intermediate staging bases, as opposed to units drawing it at the port. We're at least piloting a concept to push it from the port to intermediate staging bases, so it'll enhance our ability to be ready to operate as soon as we receive that. And then we're adding lots of complexity into our Defender series, both in Europe and the Pacific, to test our ability to do all of this. And finally, I'll say that we're certifying new ports of debarkation to expand our options for deployment nodes, ensure we have flexibility to project power.
Mr. Hall, thanks a lot for that comprehensive answer. Ms. Reardon, what's the Marine Corps doing to better deploy and sustain in a contested environment?
So the Marine Corps recognizes if we're going to effectively deploy and sustain forces in a contested environment, that we have to both reduce demand and simultaneously become more innovative with supply. To address demand, we've leaned forward to innovate a new type of combat unit, the Marine Littoral Regiment. It's smaller than our traditional air-ground task forces and designed to maneuver quickly without giving away its position while still operating close in to the enemy. In addition to being smaller, it also consumes fewer supplies, which makes it obviously easier to sustain in contested environments. Fuel obviously is a big part of our demand problem, as it is with everyone. We're working to become more energy efficient. While this is good for the planet, it also makes sustaining our forces easier by reducing one of the largest demands, which is conventional fuel. Our efforts include more efficient systems, cutting-edge distribution networks, and newer technologies to better manage the fuel we have, and even techniques to make it possible for us to source fuel locally rather than from traditional sources. We also have to be more innovative in how we supply our units, and the first part of that is our pre-positioning, much like Mr. Hall said. So the supplies we need to be obviously closer to the fight where the Marines need them most. So we envision a network of pre-positioned supplies, both afloat and ashore, that will be readily accessible to units, both during regular peacetime operations and in conflict. This means working closely with our allies and partners to find locations where we can store and access these supplies readily. The second part of our supply-side innovation is to increase the flexibility and agility of our distribution systems. For example, this means relying on helicopters or small aircraft like C-130s that can land on almost any airstrip. And similarly, it means investing in light amphibious ships that can go right up on the beach to offload cargo, so they don't need to rely on traditional ports. And we're even working on using drones to resupply our units. The third thing is we're working to better integrate our logistics systems with the Navy, which should allow us to work together to better sustain our forces. This could mean using the Navy supply ships to distribute Marine Corps materiel. It could also mean making sure the Navy and Marine Corps logistics systems can talk to each other. This will help a Marine Corps supply officer find a part they need out of a local Navy stockpile rather than placing an order all the way back to the States. And we hope the Navy will consider taking advantage of this too, potentially locating some of its supplies at forward positioned Marine Corps bases. Ultimately, as the nation's force in readiness, we have to be ready to fight and win anywhere. This means we need to be constantly looking at the best ways to supply our deployed forces so they can be ready for anything. And we've been on the forefront of this for the last 250 years, so we will continue to innovate and push for new solutions every day.
Thanks, Ms. Reardon. Ms. French, what is DLA doing to better deploy and sustain in a contested environment?
Thank you, first of all, for having me here today. And I want to start out by talking a little bit about Defense Logistics Agency. For those of you that haven't really had a lot of interaction with DLA, our mission is to be the Department of Defense's Combat Logistics Support Agency. And our mission is to support the warfighter with end-to-end global supply chain management of eight of our supply chains: subsistence, which is rations, clothing and textiles, construction and equipment, medical, repair parts, which includes aviation, land and maritime systems, and then fuel and energy. And last year, we provided more than $42 billion in goods and services. So as you look at a joint concept for contested logistics mission set, our mission is to plan and execute and enable the movement and support of military forces across multiple domains and environments in this contested environment. For DLA, it's not just supporting in combating enemy activity, but also to look at battling non-kinetic activities that affect our operations. As we look at contested environments, I wanted to kind of start out by that there's multiple ways that we have concerns with supporting our warfighter forward. One of those is regulatory challenges. And we found that over time, including what's going on right now in the UCOM region, that there have been opportunities for us to try to use our direct vendor delivery activities and finding we are challenged because of regulatory requirements. For example, more recently this year, we had issues with health certificates and our rations class 1 import rules for animal origin items entering the UCOM region. And so when our subsistence prime vendor tried to bring in U.S. products to support our U.S. warfighters, we found that we had regulatory challenges at the borders with our ports, and containers were held for health certificate reasons. We had to work through that issue with a lot of different organizations, including Office of Secretary of Defense for Policy and NATO and some other partners, and we're working through it, but we still are not completely resolving the issue. So the regulatory challenges continue to affect our operations. Another area that we found is contractual challenges and how that affects our operations. Direct vendor delivery support in some of our regions is affected because we find that we have contracts that don't meet the requirements of the country that we're supporting. One example we had most recently is the James Agrota 9/11 Health and Compensation Act, which imposes a 2% tax on any foreign person or foreign-owned company receiving payment under a contract with the United States. And what we found is more recently, we're having countries who we partner with who are getting taxed because of this new requirement. And what it has affected most recently is in Kuwait, the Kuwaiti Petroleum Company, who we do partnership with to support our warfighter there in the region. And we're having to work through, again, some contracting challenges with regards to how we support with fuel and energy products. We have not resolved that to this time because of some contractual regulatory requirements. And again, we're having to work through different parties to make sure that we support our warfighter. Another example that's held us up with contested logistics is cyber challenges. And most recently, last year, we had the Colonial Pipeline cyber attack here in the United States, which affected companies and shut down some pipeline and some fuel operations. Again, another challenge that affects logistics because of it being a way that we support our operators and finding that the cyber community or the cyber issues can shut down operations quickly and disrupt our support. There's multiple ways that we found in DLA that can affect our logistics operations, not just kinetic actions. And so we have to review all of these different challenges that we come across and find ways to improve our operations, train our workforce, and work through multiple partners, including Transcom, the COCOMs, Office of Secretary of Defense, our allies and partners, and find ways to get through some of these challenges to make sure that we are providing the best support possible forward in a contested logistics environment. So again, more to follow on that, but the bottom line is that we find ways to get through these hurdles and these challenges to make sure that we are supporting our warfighter forward.
Thanks, Ms. French. That's a great way to describe a contested environment that's not kinetic that we all have to deal with. So, Ms. O'Brien, what is the JCSJ-4 and the Joint Staff doing to better support and sustain a contested environment?
I'm very honored to be in this group and had been looking forward to this. And to step back just a minute, you know, we talk a lot about contested environments. We just heard a couple of great examples, the DROGA Act and the Colonial Pipeline. But I actually wanted to put a little personal spin on it as well, because I just got back from a short little holiday on the Eastern Shore. I'd never been to the Eastern Shore. It's going to take me 90 minutes to get where I wanted to go, right? So got the GPS up, 90 minutes. So then this rainstorm came out of absolutely nowhere, right? And I started watching the time on the GPS actually go backwards, right? And then I get to the Midway Bridge. For any of you that have gone over the Midway Bridge, this was my first time. It was kind of a white knuckle driving. There was traffic. I actually got to sit on the bridge for a while. The GPS time kept going backwards. So I'm not at 90 minutes anymore. I am over 90 minutes, and I've actually been driving for a while. And then I get over the bridge. I'm moving now. I'm going to get there. And then this is what you never want to happen in your car as you are going on vacation. The red oil light comes on and is flashing, and my Volkswagen is like screaming at me to stop the car immediately, which I had to do, right? So through a comedy of errors, I actually survived the trip. My car is still alive. The engine did not blow up. But my 90-minute trip took way over like 3 hours, right? So that was a contested environment. So we can take that same kind of example and put it in a lot of different types of environments. Colonial Pipeline, COVID, closed borders, the Suez Canal getting blocked, and then all those second and third order effects. From a joint staff perspective, how are we working with our partners to try to get after this? So just wanted to highlight initially kind of three things, and then I think we have an opportunity for some great dialogue here. But from a joint staff perspective, we have no authority and we have no money. So our job is kind of cajole and kind of convince folks to go in a certain direction. So to do that right now, we're really focused on visibility, having visibility across the services and providing visibility to our combatant commands and enabling resilience. And we've already highlighted some great examples of how to get after resilience already. But the way we're trying to get after that initially, starting with visibility, is having visibility of our data and then being able to analyze our data. So putting that in an operational context, understanding our munitions inventories, understanding our fuel inventories and what that looks like, and working very closely with the Defense Logistics Agency to do that. And then also rations and sustenance. So what do we have? Where is it? Again, partnering closely with DLA, but with the services as well, and bringing all that together, because once we have that, then we're able to make decisions. And we're living through that right now with Ukraine as we look at visibility for our munitions. We lived through that with Afghanistan NEO, understanding where people were. And even if we look back to COVID, PPE, of which a lot of time with DLA on the phone and the services trying to figure out what we had where. And we can't use spreadsheets. We need to have a visibility of that data. So next step then, we kind of got data, but then also what do we need to look like and how do we need to operate in the future? And that's all about concepts and capabilities, and how do we look at that from a joint lens? And through the JSIDS process, trying to take more of a holistic approach to what are the joint requirements to get after this type of contested and future fight, kind of tied in with the National Defense Strategy. So looking at it from logistics, how do we bring the services together? How do we look at things jointly? And then how do we kind of test and exercise and try things so that we understand where potentially from a joint perspective we should be investing and supporting certain investments? So we've gotten a little creative at that at the joint staff. Again, we don't have any money, but we can work with our J7 and our J8 to use warfighter incentive funds. We've partnered with West Point, we've partnered with the Naval Postgraduate School and even the Naval Academy to have students as well as faculty support us with research and running a number of different exercises and research for us, and kind of bringing all these different things together, working with the services to then tie that back into how can we inform some of these future concepts and capabilities that we're looking at. And then finally, the distribution and sustainment part, right? And that's all about building resiliency. So rather than having a single point of failure, what are those different options? So the services looking at different ways to do pre-positioning, right? And how can we be more resilient there? And in terms of the industrial base, single points of failure versus multiple options. How can we work better with some of our partners, such as Australia, to enable maintenance, repair operations, and having more than a single way? We don't have to bring maintenance all the way back to potentially the United States. We could do things in forward locations. That opens up supply lines. That also opens up options. So how can we continue to build that type of resiliency? And how can we partner in new and different ways with commercial entities to enable, again, more than a single point of failure? What other ports do they have? What other relationships do they have that we could leverage? And starting to understand and leverage some of those capabilities, again, all in terms of building resilience. So that's a big focus of what we're looking at. So new creative solutions for resiliency, really being able to push forward on concepts and capabilities in partnership with the services and the combatant commands and DLA. And then finally, data, seeing our data, understanding our data, and then being able to use that to analyze and to inform to make better decisions. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. O'Brien. Now that everybody's got to hear the same question answered in a few different ways, I'd like to give you another bite at the apple. Mr. Hall, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I would like to talk a little bit more about how we see the future of sustainment in the United States Army. And I'll start with the point Ms. O'Brien just made. I mean, it's really all about data. It's really all about data. And if in a multi-domain environment supporting large-scale combat operations, you have to have clean, reliable data that you used in order to make decisions. We believe because of the way we'll execute operations in the future, the Army, in particular, will move farther, faster than ever before with more frequent moves than ever before. Lots of reasons for that, but the bottom line is farther, faster, more frequent moves that will cause us to get to change from a sort of pull logistics system where units ask for things to a push logistics system where sustainment units and personnel determine what a unit needs before it knows it needs it, is moving it toward that space in the battle, in the operating space. That's in the tactical operational space. That's how we'll use data. At the national level, we at the enterprise level, we believe we'll need use it to really deliver increased readiness at lower costs, you know, to enable fleet readiness decisions, to be able to push stocks around and make maintenance decisions earlier and faster and produce readiness at a lower cost. So really, there's four things about data that we have to do. One, first, you have to capture the data. First, you have to capture the data. And you know, some people think about sensor platforms, which really is very important. But for the Army, the convergence of our logistics and finance ERPs is very important. That's where the solution, we're driving toward enterprise business systems convergence, which will converge those ERPs into one in FY26. That will generate the data that will solve the problems that we think we need to, that we'll have to solve. So that's capturing the data. Then we have to move the data, right? We have to move the data in an operational environment, so we have the sustainment transport system that we're working on in the Army right now. It's not funded at the level. Enterprise Business Systems, by the way, convergence is funded. It's fully funded. It was fully funded in last POM. I know that because we're responsible on the G4 for providing funding for defense business systems. And we're working to get it funded in next POM. So I think we're okay there. Sustainment transport system, we're not where we need to be as an Army. So that's a challenge that we've got to take on to be able to capture, to move the data into command posts, right? So that's the other challenge we have. We've got to move data from business systems into mission command systems. That's a challenge that we're still kind of working through in the Army. And then we have to display the data in a way that enables decisions. So it can't be raw numbers. It's got to be data that enables staffs to make recommendations and commanders to make decisions. And then finally, we have to educate our logisticians and our sustainers on to make this understandable to them so that they can make those decisions, make those recommendations that enable us to, you know, predict and move things before, you know, the United States Army has always solved problems through mass, through volume, logistics problems through mass and volume. In fact, there was a UK general in World War II made this statement that the U.S. Army does not solve logistics problems, it overwhelms them. And we can't do that in a multi-domain environment. We have to be very predictive and very precise. And so, you know, we're working all that. I think we have some momentum in that space. And in fact, I have a session with the Army G3 this afternoon to talk about the funding for some of the data analytics courses that we're going to start for Army logisticians, both military and civilian. A couple of material systems we're working on that will help this. So we've recently funded and developed a medium equipment transport. That was a gap we had in the Army for moving big systems. We had, you know, we had the heavy equipment transport for tanks and things like that, and we had the lower end. Now we've got a medium equipment transport that we'll start fielding in FY26. And by the way, we're looking at all of this in terms of not just joint, but partners and allies as well. At least in NATO, we think we're probably going to be kind of okay there. The Germans already working a multinational COP. Most NATO nations use SAP as their ERP, and so we think, and of course that's what we're using, that's what we plan to use. We think we're going to be able to create a multinational COP. With the Pacific, it'll be more of a challenge, and we need to work on that as well.
Thanks, Mr. Hall. Great points. Ms. Reardon.
Hot topic today with energy. We talked earlier about the limitations of bulk fuel movement across the battle space. So The Marine Corps is looking at alternative power possibilities and that application towards our expeditionary advanced base operations. We're looking at enhancing rechargeable lithium ion power storage that can be agnostically charged. We're looking at hybrid propulsion kit capacities to extend operational range and expand employment options. And we're embracing an onboard vehicle power source to produce exportable energy from our ground vehicles. And finally, we're looking at ways to exploit hydrogen fuel cells to increase operational parameters. We're certainly not going to be able to lug, like we said, all the fuel that we need or all the batteries, and alternative power sources are an imperative of the future.
Thanks, Ms. Reardon. I'm sure that's music to Dasty Energy's ears. Ms. French.
Well, as we continue on this theme about contested logistics and how DLA gets at that to overcome some of the challenges that we are faced with as we deploy our forces overseas, and even here in CONUS as we have some contested logistics challenges, we do send people worldwide to support operations. So DLA does have a global footprint. We have regional commands that are permanently stationed alongside our combatant command headquarters and are there to ensure day-to-day operational and strategic support to our warfighters supporting forward. We have LNOs and we have customer service reps who are embedded in operations all across the globe. And we have expeditionary teams that are available to deploy really on a moment's notice to support any operations. Right now, we have discussions about deployable depots and disposition teams that are needed in parts of the globe that are available to deploy forward to support the warfighter. So we're constantly looking at ways to transition our operations and make sure that we have an agile, flexible, and responsive workforce that can support as forward as needed. And then the other point I want to make is something that Mr. Hall brought up and also Ms. O'Brien earlier is about data. And DLA has an enterprise data warehouse. We have a oodles and oodles of data available to us at our disposal that we use in a dashboard type format, but we're constantly updating it and looking at ways to bring it into a joint environment such as Advana, which is a newer dashboard that the joint staff and OSD is supporting, to make sure that everyone has visibility of the information that we have at our fingertips that can support decision-making at all levels. And we're modernizing our business systems and continuing to improve our automated awards and purchases so that we can ensure that we have the information available to make decisions to ensure our logistics is supported forward. I know that we have, as I mentioned earlier, challenges because of either cyber or contracts or regulations, and that's not the only thing that could potentially delay our decision making, but we do look at all of the different information we have and experiences we've had in past operations to help us decide to best support forward. Again, between our forward presence and then our data capabilities and our information flowing across all the different parts of the Defense Logistics Agency, we ensure the warfighters' logistics needs are met. Thanks.
Ms. French, thanks very much. I'm glad you identified the forward presence. I often used to say the sun never set on DLA. Ms. O'Brien.
Thanks so much. I have a couple items here I'd like to just follow up on a little bit. And the first one referenced what Mr. Hall said regarding kind of displaying data for decisions. And a lot of that is actually displaying the decisions are not necessarily for logisticians. The decisions are for the operators. And as we talk about actually enabling us to execute in a contested environment, it's not about logisticians. It's really about the operators. So I think over the course of all the learning we've done in the last couple years, really starting to increase the partnership and emphasizing how important it is for logisticians and operators truly to work together, and logistics really has to be part of planning. because if we need to be resilient, it builds in all these different things that from an operational perspective you may have to do, or you may not have access where you need it. You may not have the fuel when and where you need it. And what does that mean? So logistics will truly potentially drive operations. So working through that in advance is so important, and then being able to have the data available to share to enable some of those operational decisions becomes so important. So we've had the opportunity from a Joint Staff J4 perspective to actually brief some of these challenges and some of the work we're doing with our data and our data resiliency initiatives to the DEP ops DEPs, and then also we'll get to do that to the operation, to the ops DEPs, so the three-star operators, so that they truly understand the importance of this and working together. So those are some of the steps we're taking. The other thing I wanted to highlight was demand reduction. So Ms. Rudin spoke about that from a Marine Corps perspective, and from a Logistics Functional Capability Board, we just kicked off some new work literally in demand reduction. So trying to understand from a joint perspective, what are some of the top initiatives that our services, combatant commands, and partner agencies are doing right now in the demand reduction arena? And it's really broad, right? Demand reduction can be anything. It could be supply lines. It could be how we're equipping some of our vehicles. It could be how we're prepositioning but what kind of specific capabilities are the services focused on? We're going to look at that, and then we're going to scope that a little bit and go, where do we need to focus from a joint perspective? Our timing on this is really good because of the emphasis on climate right now. So there's an intersection when we look at energy and climate and reducing our energy requirements. So by doing that, that helps us from a logistics perspective. So it's kind of a win. So that is, again, just an initiative we just kicked off on the Joint Staff through our Functional Capabilities Board, but are really looking forward to getting the inputs from the services and the combatant commands and kind of scoping that data and figuring out where do we need to focus effort and where are there opportunities jointly for us to work together and potentially drive some new capabilities and to inform some decisions going forward. So first step, lots to learn, but there's a lot of momentum in this environment right now, which is really good from a logistics perspective. So lots of learning and lots of opportunity. Thanks.
Thanks, Ms. O'Brien. Ms. Reardon, you have something else.
Just one additional thing maybe to sort of round out the discussion today. Contested logistics highlights the global challenge to deploy and sustain our joint forces. Military operations are all domain, air, land, sea, space, and cyber. Logistics is also all domain. And a great asset as well as challenge is our relationship and reliance on private companies and corporations for both manufacturing and transportation. Each of these relationships is a critical link in the supply chain to deploy and sustain forces. And unfortunately, links in the chain can be broken. For this reason, the Marine Corps is working to expand our sources and distribution options to increase resiliency with a supply web. We're using this mindset to shift our training and education of joint logistics professionals to increase critical thinking and dynamic responsiveness.
Thanks, Ms. Reardon. Ms. French, I think you wanted to cap this off.
Thanks, everyone. And I just would tell you that contested logistics is hard. And if it wasn't hard, we wouldn't be here talking about it today. And so I guess to close it out, one of my favorite quotes, and I can't attribute it to anyone because we've heard it in multiple forums, but I'd like to remind everyone that amateurs talk tactics, professionals talk logistics. Thanks.
So I'd like to thank everyone for participating today. You know, as I looked around the room, and I listen to this crew of experts speak, I'm very proud to call you all my friends and colleagues. And I know you don't want to think about this, but there's probably about 185 years of experience in the room right now. So it's a very important podcast to document. Thank you very much.